There's a very famous teaching in the Talmud that our rabbis teach that it says, in one pocket, you carry a little piece of paper that says, the world was made for me. And in the other pocket, he basically says, who am I? And just basically a piece of dust.
Welcome to Premier Christian Radio's Babel Undone podcast featuring Archbishop Joseph D'Souza. Bishop D'Souza is a renowned Christian intellectual and human rights activist from India who leads the Good Shepherd Movement and the All India Christian Council. And I'm Johnny Moore, an American evangelical who serves as the president of the Congress of Christian Leaders. I come from America. The Archbishop comes from India. So naturally, we meet in London. Bishop, our topic today is
passing faith to the next generation. In the past few years, many parents have had to face the discouraging reality of their children walking away from their faith. As a parent, I can imagine this would be a heartbreaking experience. When young people drift from their faith, it leads us to ask a lot of soul-searching questions and to reconsider what we could do better. What can parents, houses of worship, and faith leaders throughout our communities do to support young people in such a way that they are drawn towards faith rather than away from it? How do we ensure faith in God is a cornerstone of their identity? These are the incredible important questions we are going to discuss with today's guest.
And our guest today, Bishop, is someone that you and I both know. In fact, we visited his synagogue in Los Angeles, the iconic Sinai Temple. And from that community, Rabbi Erez Sherman has touched the entire world. He's the founder of the Sinai Temple Israel Center's Rabbinical School Fellowship, which prepares future rabbis studying in seminaries all across North America to engage on so many topics in a deep and nuanced manner, including the topic that we're talking about today. How do you transfer your faith to future generations? He also oversees a number of boards and other fellowships. He leads a Jewish day school in Los Angeles. And he is an avid sports fan and leads a podcast called Rabbi on the Sidelines, dedicated to the intersection of sports and faith. And he joins us now. So, Rabbi Sherman, we know one another quite well. Bishop D'Souza and I, attended Sinai Temple right after the October 7th terrorist attacks. Our audience, however, many people are just getting to know you. And so in all of these conversations, I always like to begin with the same question, okay? It's a super simple question, and you can answer it however you like. So if you're feeling philosophical or theological today, existential, or if you just want to speak practically, you can do that. And here's the question. Who is Erez Sherman?
Yes, that is a philosophical question and theological, but I'm going to go on the human being side.
Yeah, that's what we want to know.
I'm a husband, a father, a son, a friend, a rabbi, a spiritual leader, a sports fan, and a musician. And if you can put all those together, it makes me who I am. And there's a very famous teaching in the Talmud that our rabbis teach that it says, in one pocket, you carry a little piece of paper that says the world was made for me. And then the other pocket, he basically says, who am I? And just basically a piece of dust. And so we have to be reminded of that both of those days. And through all those titles that we have and all those titles that I just named, I'm the same person that I wake up every single morning. And to me, that makes me a Jew.
And Rabbi Sherman, how many years of theological or rabbinical studies do you have to do to qualify as rabbi?
Yeah, so within the conservative movement, which is where I was ordained at the Jewish Theological Seminary of America in New York, it's 5 years after a BA. So I studied music at Columbia University for 4 years. That's Columbia University, everybody. then it's 5 years. But within those 5 years, you actually spend a year in Israel, in Jerusalem. That's the Schechter Institute, right by the Israel Museum, right behind the Knesset. And that year was transformative in two ways. three ways. One, academically, just to study the actual sacred text in the sacred land. Two, I met my wife there, and we became engaged in Jerusalem at the Western Wall. And three, Israel is family. Most of my family lives there. And so we say in Hebrew, Libi Bamizrach, that our heart is in the East. And sitting in L.A. doesn't mean New York or London. It means in Jerusalem.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Rabbi, we've talked about this a bit, you know, personally, but one of the things that I've become most interested about when it comes to the relationship between Jews and Christians is what the Christian community can learn. We call the Hebrew Bible the Old Testament. It's actually the Hebrew Bible, you know. And what Christians can learn from the way the Jewish community lives life and practices faith, you know, whether you're religious or not, even, you know, there is this like rhythm to life. And how much is that related? First of all, like, you know, talk to us a bit about that, you know, because a lot of our audience won't understand that even. And then secondly, like, how is that related to actually passing on the faith and the tradition to future generations?
So often they say the Jewish holidays come early or late. It's on time. It's just a different calendar. So I just remember, first of all, you, Reverend Moore, when you came here right after October 7th and you spoke to the entire Los Angeles community of interfaith audiences at Sinai Temple. And the next day we met in the office and I said, I don't want to sit in the office. I want to walk around at the synagogue. And we walked around and you saw kids and lots of kids, hundreds of kids, not just in prayer, but also playing. And my mother always says a synagogue should be a place to pray and to play, that the synagogue physical building should feel like a home. In Hebrew, a synagogue is called Beit Knesset. It means a house of gathering. It's three names. Beit Midrash is a house of study. Beit Tefillah is a house of prayer. But Beit Knesset, a house of gathering. And I think over this past year, where we have seen, as we now call the post-October 7th surge, that people are coming back, I say, for the three C's. For connection, for content, and for community. Number one, our next generation is not going to be fooled if the content is not high level. By high level, meaning where it meets them in their own life. Number two, connection. We were afraid when live streaming came to synagogues well after the Christian audience was doing it so well, that nobody would come. And instead, what happened is when we put it online, people said, I have to experience in person that connection of what's happening online. And number three is community. There is no substitute for a handshake, for a hug. And we saw so many hugs post-October 7th. And when we say community, I also say it's the absence of presence, specifically for our hostages. And you noticed when you walked into our Sinai Temple community, we had 251 empty chairs with names and ages on it because we knew that that absence was actually their presence. And something you told me last week that I didn't even realize because I take it for granted is when we did the prayer for the state of Israel, we asked people who are connected to somebody in the land of Israel who's fighting for the land of Israel to stand up. And I would say 90% of the seats, people rose. So those three, community, connection, and content, I think are the keys that will, number one, keep young people within faith, but number two, bring back those who lost that connection of faith after a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah rite of passage. For so many years, we had 13-year-old Jews walking around in 50-year-old bodies, and we have to change that to 50-year-old Jews walking around in 50-year-old bodies.
Rabbi Sherman, passing on the faith to the next generation is a challenge. And I'm sure that the Jewish faith has also met those challenges when people who are born in Jewish homes, etc., decide that they, you know, they want to move out of that or become agnostic or whatever. And the Jewish faith is no more real or important, etc. I just want to ask a question. If you look at the Jews around the world and the Jewish faith, what percentage of young people you think are actively involved in the Jewish faith? Jewish young people are actively involved in the Jewish faith.
I might say something that's a bit controversial, but A Jewish atheist is still a Jew. And so even though they might not have the practice of God in their life, which as a rabbi, the three things that we really live and preach is God, Torah, and Israel, they still have the other two options to make sure that the God piece comes back. They might not call it God moments. I call it God moments, but whether your child is born, whether we're standing at a grave, whether we're under a wedding canopy, all those moments, I like to say, we all come back home eventually. So if we give them the home, as we said, the Beit Knesset, the house of gathering, if we give them the foundation, then they always have that spark in their soul, in Hebrew, the neshama. And if the spark, even if it's very light, we know a spark can engulf, and fire can be both a curse, but really fire can also be a blessing that it warms our hearts. So right now, if we spoke a year and a half ago, I would say that there was a large percentage of young professionals, and I say that 21 to 39, that's how we define that, that were lost, that didn't want the connection, that we would reach out and they would say, are you calling me because my parents told you to call me? Today, once a month, we have a Shabbat of young professionals, of 200 young professionals. It's sold out every single month. It might have started with the content, like I said, but now it's because of the community. It's because they want to see not somebody necessarily that is like them, but is engaging in the same sacred purpose, that they're being part of something that's bigger than themselves. So I don't have a percentage worldwide, but I would say there is a resurgence of young professional life and religious education, where before it was soccer over religion. There was one rabbi that once asked a parent, are you going to be a professional soccer player or are you going to be a professional Jew? And when the parent thought about that, there are plenty of professional soccer players. And don't get me wrong, I'm the biggest sports aficionado. But when your soccer career is over, your religious career is not. That's a lifetime path. So if you can do both, which I'm a big fan of, then absolutely. But your religious life is eternal, not just on this earth, but after as well. But you have to start that process here.
So. One of the things that has intrigued us in other parts of the world as to how the Jewish people kept their faith alive, mm-hmm. even after being dispersed and not being able to experience the kind of community they could within a nation. What do you think were the secrets of how the passing on of faith from generation to generation took place within the Jewish people?
Yes, I love that question. So we're also called the Am HaSefer, which is the people of the book. So our shared sacred text is what has kept us alive. But it has to be more than that. We unfortunately saw the murder this week of Rabbi Tzvi Kogan of blessed memory in the
yes.
UAE. And when you look at where Jews will go, if there is one Jew, then there will be another Jew because we're going to create a community there. I'm blessed in Los Angeles where I'm surrounded by a very large Jewish community, but in places like UAE, like India, like places in Africa, in the United States, like Idaho, we can exist anywhere because number one of the book, but number two, the relationships that we build with people. I'm blessed to be in conversation with you. Honestly, we met before October 7th because we wanted to engage in this religious life together. And so it's the strength of soul that has kept us alive. This past week, my predecessor, Rabbi David Wolpe, gave a sermon that was called The Jewish Future. And he said, I'd be lying if I told you that I know the Jewish future because I would be a prophet. But I'm not. I'm a rabbi. But the only thing I can tell you, he told us, was that there will be a Jewish future. And the fact that there will be because of not just the book, because those young people, right, that we spoke about, they're not active in the book. The book sometimes comes after the content, the community, and the connection. But I do know, for instance, last week when we heard from Professor Shai Davidai from Columbia University, he said after the anti-Semitic acts on the university, he, described as a self-proclaimed atheist, the first thing he went to do as an atheist was walk into a synagogue because that's where he felt home. Hmm. He felt home in a religious life that he did not know was in that soul that he had a spark of.
Such a different concept for us, because in our community, if you don't believe in God, or you depart from the faith, you depart from the faith, and actually it's quite a traumatizing experience, and I love this like part of the Jewish tradition where you have this connection that transcends all of these things, and I also think like as an evangelical that comes from a very sort of like fundamentalist type of tradition. It's liberating to me to see how my Jewish friends like read the Bible, because you ask all kinds of questions and you argue over stuff, and the Talmud is like you capture it all. You know, it's not like so much picking and choosing. You know, it's all in there. And you know, you say community, connection, and what was the third
content?
Content. Yeah, I often think of like Judaism and the three words that occur to me. Like one is like memory. The other one is education, and then community. It's sort of the same thing. But like, how do you look at the educational, you know, part of this? Because education is such a part of Jewish tradition. Like, it's not just the content. Like, it's just you just value education, you know, at a different level, I think.
Yeah. So a great example of that is the Abu Yadaya Jews in Uganda. Rabbi Gershom Suzomu, who's amazing. He was trained here at American Jewish University in Los Angeles, and he went back home to basically restart his Jewish community. And you realize that when you talked about how do Jews survive anywhere, it actually is education. When the temple was destroyed in 70 CE after the Common Era, we could have been done. That would have been enough. We tried. It didn't work. But what do they do? We create these things called rabbis, which go to the place called Yavne, which says, no, we're not going to have sacrifices, but we will have something called prayer. Hmm. We're not going to have stuff in Jerusalem like this. We're going to have synagogues where people come, where they will study what it was. And ironically, or not ironically, our Talmud, which you just mentioned, there's two Talmuds. There's a Jerusalem Talmud and the Babylonian Talmud. The one that we don't study is the Jerusalem Talmud, meaning our entire rabbinic tradition was created in Babylonia, today present-day Iraq, outside of the land of Israel, only hoping that maybe one day we would go back there. And I'm 42 years old. I've never lived in a world where there has not been a state of Israel for the Jewish people. I don't want to live in a world like that. And I'm truly, truly grateful of friends like you who also don't want to live in a world like that, and for this relationship between the Christian community and the Jewish community. But education has been how we have survived. And the fact that I can go anywhere in the world and open up that page of Talmud and speaking the same language, which was quote-unquote dead for so many years, to me, that I would say is a miracle of our people.
You know, we it's amazing how fast these conversations go by, we have to also ask you about this rise in anti-Semitism mm-hmm. around the world. And, you know, we spend a lot of time on this podcast talking about this and bringing experts on this subject and hearing stories of people. What has it been like to be Jewish in America, Jewish in the world for that matter, in the aftermath of October 7th, like what are the lessons that you've learned? What are lessons our audience should be paying attention to?
Last night for our daughter's bat mitzvah, which will be in a couple of weeks, she's 13, and you do a mitzvah project, you do an act of loving kindness. And we went to a domestic women's shelter and we cooked dinner for them. And before we went in, we didn't know who the people would be. We asked ourselves, should we be wearing a kippah? Should we be tucking in a necklace? Not because we were afraid of the people there, but maybe because they would ask us questions that we just didn't want to talk about, but we wanted to just do an act of loving kindness. The fact that we're asking those questions is a very difficult thing for people like me who have young children. What shirts you have to wear on the streets, how you say your name in an Uber, where you're going on an airplane. Those were stories that I heard from my grandparents that came from Poland. But to be asking and teaching that is very difficult, to be spending lots of resources simply on security to protect my own house of worship, when I look at my fellow churches in the neighborhood and their doors are physically wide open, and I say, wow, one day I wish I could do that. And at the same time, and I don't say this lightly, friends that have come and said, not only we are with you, but we are standing for you, we speak for you, and as I've heard from you so many times, Reverend Moore, there are millions like me. To me, that sends warmth over my soul. And every single day I meet another person like you, and I hope to God that you meet another person like me. And that has been a blessing that I don't think we would have connected in such a deep level if we also didn't have this curse at this moment.
Yeah, I've been saying that. I think we said that. What has happened, Rabbi, is that the church, Christianity, is very cognizant of the fact of what happened in Germany and the complicity of the church in what happened. There are all kinds of interpretation and views and everything else. But I think October 7th and what happened gave the global church and the U.S. church and those who say that they believe the God of the Bible an opportunity to put that bad history behind us between the Jews and the Christians. We are very cognizant of the fact that we, you know, have been one of your main persecutors over the hundreds of years, and it is all just total nonsense. So, I was in a conference which was there in Dallas. And I was talking to my Jewish friends, and I said to them, you know, India is probably now 70, 80 million Christians. And the vast majority of Indian Christians would stand and support Israel. So this is a new time. And we're all trying to figure out, okay, we need to now combat this anti-Semitism that's going on around the world. A lot of it has been, first of all, initiated by the Marxist nations for their political agenda. And then we have extremist Islamism, which just unbelievable hatred towards Jews and the state of Israel and all. And that's just not right. And this time, not only you will not forget, we will not forget. So it's a common shared battle, and I think we have great opportunity, and we want to learn from one another, right? So I, as a bishop of the church, I read and I'm fascinated of how the Jewish faith survived through all of the stuff that they had to go through, and there is still the Jewish faith and still the Jewish people. And the strong sense of identity you'll have. And so there's a lot we can learn from each other. And this subject we have chosen is because Christians are facing a crisis as well because of Western left liberalism, secularism, you know, and lots of thinkers, including Jewish thinkers, who just reject the divine and God and everything else. And and so how do we make sure that the next generation of Christian young people receive from their parents and their communities the faith that has enriched us? And together, in fact, I have said in my writing, another said, my roots go back to Abraham, who is the father of our faith too. And so in protecting and ensuring that Israel and now what has happened historical is not messed up again, we have to stand with one another and challenge the lies of Christians, Jews, whoever, and largely those who want to destroy Israel.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the most powerful things that we've seen is that it's love for the Jewish community and love for the state of Israel that has bridged the political divides all over the world, too. I mean, in the United States of America, you know, I'm meeting all kinds of people that are on one side of the aisle that are aligned with people on the other side of the aisle now because they see, like, we have a shared there's so much we agree upon. We have a shared fight for shared values, for you know, shared commitment to freedom, you know, all of these other things. And you know, for America to have the largest Jewish community outside of Israel, and the most influential evangelical community, in my case, you know, in the world, and we're just getting to know one another. And there's this, like, true, very, very powerful idea in Scripture that says what the enemy meant for evil, God uses for good. And I think one of the things that has happened is all these people who want to spread hatred, they've created a new alliance, and we're learning from one another and changing minds about all. I've changed my mind about all kinds of things, you know, as I've gotten to know people. And Rabbi, I hope in this conversation, Bishop of the largest democracy in the world, and of course we're both Americans. The message is loud and clear that we stand with our Jewish brothers and sisters. I'll give you the last word as we run out of time.
Yeah, at the end of our Seder, at the Passover meal, right? We say in Hebrew, "L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim habnuya," not that we should be next year in Jerusalem. But if you're sitting in Jerusalem for the Passover meal, the question is, what do you say? You're already there. And you say those same words, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim habnuya, that you should be in a rebuilt Jerusalem. And it usually meant, you know, messianic times, that maybe there'd be a third temple, and some people believe that and some people don't. But I think this year, those words really ring true, that next year in a rebuilt Jerusalem, we have experienced physical destruction. We also experience spiritual destruction. And at the same time, as Bishop and Reverend that you just brought so clearly to our minds, that we've also been spiritually uplifted. We have been physically uplifted. I can tell you that the physical embrace that I have felt from my Christian neighbors and friends has been something that I never experienced before. This Sunday, I'm going to a church because they're having a Celebrate Israel Day. Those are places that, just as you show up for us, we need to be there with you. And we are so grateful for what you do each and every day.
Thank you, Rabbi Sherman. Bishop D'Souza, I love Rabbi Sherman. I mean, he's one of the great young religious leaders in the world. You know, he leads this iconic synagogue in Los Angeles, a place we both visited. This conversation focused on passing faith to the next generation, and he's a leader who is part of a successful transition. I mean, he the longtime rabbi of Sinai Temple passed down the baton to Rabbi Sherman, and he's got that baton, and one day he will pass it down. How important is it that we have smooth transitions from one generation to the next?
Huge, hugely important, because if there are not proper transitions, then the foundations of whether it's an organization or a society or a faith collapse. I have to say that the Christian world has had its successes in passing the faith to its next generation. Equally, I think, has massive failures, because our next generation is not comfortable with how we do faith. And so hearing from Rabbi is very important, because you have to hand it to the Jewish people. They have a long history in when they were not a people and a land. They were a people there, but there was no land. How they have preserved their faith and how they have handed it. And so I think there's a lesson for all of us to learn. And of course, the issue of succession, we are not going to be here forever. We always have to think, okay, how does the next generation sit? How are they going to carry what God has given us?
Yeah, and it's a two-way street. I mean, you learn. The older generation learns from the younger, and the younger learns from the older, and that's the way it's supposed to be. And then also, as we've done so many times on Babylon Done, We've looked at the Bible through Hebraic eyes, because the Old Testament is actually the Hebrew Bible, and we have so much to learn from the Jewish community. And this conversation with Rabbi Sherman, like every conversation I've ever had with him, is a good reminder why the Christian community has a lot to learn from their older brothers and sisters in the Jewish community.
Amen.
Thank you for joining us today for Babel Undone. If this conversation had you thinking, then why don't you share it with someone else? For more episodes of Babel Undone or other amazing content that helps Christians live out their faith, you should head over to premier.plus. That's Premier, P-R-E-M-I-E-R, for the Americans listening in, .plus.